Blog Talk Radio.
From Los Angeles, I'm Frank Thomas on the Creating Calm Network on Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Hour of Truth with Coach FT. I'm your host. I'm a man of God who is disguised as a coach, consultant, speaker, and author of the forthcoming book, Rise, Even Death Can't Stop Me. This is my debut book about overcoming a childhood marred by parental addictions, abandonment, adversity, and bad choices, and how I turned everything that could have been a reason to quit into a reason to succeed. Thank you for tuning in. Whether you're listening live, replay, or podcast, I'm honored that you would take part of your day to allow me the opportunity to speak into your life. That's a privilege as far as I'm concerned, and one I take very seriously. Power of Truth with Coach FT is about sharing the truths of life through my experiences, the experiences of my guests, and the experiences of you, the listeners. I can't think of any better way to invite people into a conversation than through the telling of stories. Stories that change people, stories that transform lives. We always appreciate questions and comments that you believe are insightful and encouraging to our listeners. So if you have a question or comment, I encourage you to share. Our lines are open, and the call-in number is area code 619-393-2918. Again, area code 619-393-2918. You know, one of the benefits of doing this show is the ability to bring in guests who are simply amazing people with absolutely amazing stories. My guest today is a kindred spirit. From the moment I read her blog to the first conversation we had, I knew she was someone special, someone who had a special story and a gift to offer those who had ears to hear and a heart to receive. My guest today is Suzanne Freiberg. Suzanne is a nationally recognized expert in strategic job search, holds a degree in theology, and is the founder and president of her own company, The Gifted Vocation, which is a faith-based career coaching and job search consulting firm. Suzanne recently returned from the White House, where she was a featured speaker at the Getting America Back to Work Forum. Suzanne's mission is to inspire others to integrate their unique gifts and talents into their careers. She has dedicated her life to working, to teaching others who God created them to be is who they were meant to be. And each and every one of us has a role to play in God's divine plan, especially when it comes to our careers. Today's show is titled, Could Your Job Be Killing You? We'll be talking about the secrets to uncovering, exploring, and expressing your unique gifts through your career. Suzanne, welcome to the Hour of Truth with Coach FT. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Frank, and thank you for inviting me today. I know, as do you, from our first conversation, that we both have our own missions, but we are so blessed that those missions have been brought together so that exponentially we can be even more powerful in sharing those messages and reaching even more people. So thank you so much.
Oh, the pleasure is all mine. So Suzanne, I come across your blog one day, and I read the title of one of the articles you wrote, We Don't See Our Careers As They Are, We See Them As We Are. And I read it, and the first thing that came to my mind was, I'm not the only unicorn in the world. Can you share with our listeners a little bit about your career story and how you came to a career crossroads in a defining moment?
Yeah, I would be happy to share my story with another unicorn. and how I found myself there was, you know, I very well intended. You know, my plan wasn't to be at a career crossroads. My plan was to grow a career. And I started out in sales, you know, worked up into sales management, executive director of sales, you know, kind of followed that path, set my goals, achieved the goals. And I thought things were going pretty well for a certain amount of time, but you know, something began to slowly change over time. And what I noticed was as the organization became more successful, as my team became more successful, you know, there was never enough to feed the corporate machine, so to speak. And especially I think we can relate to that being in sales because you're always working with goals. So, you know, we may start out, your goal is 10 sales this month. And once everyone made it and achieved that, the goal was now 12 sales per month. And once everyone made that and achieved it, it was now 14 sales per month. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with goals. There's nothing wrong with growing. But when the organization itself starts to change and the goal is the end-all, be-all, and no longer does the health, the well-being, the individual person matter in achieving those goals, and those that, you know, can't keep up are trampled over, it starts to feel different. So that was the beginning of change for me, that, you know, we were moving from a healthy environment with healthy goals and reasonable goals to something that was felt more like a machine and more like the people were being used in some way. And I started to become uncomfortable with that. And then what happened next was that, you know, and at this point we're all working more hours to make those goals. And, you know, don't get me wrong, we were excited. We loved what we did. We were making good money. So, you know, there was a lot of good that went along with that. But, again, there was this feeling of being part of a machine as opposed to part of building something.
But let me ask you this.
Please, yeah.
How far into your career were you at that point? I mean,
I had been with this particular organization as an executive director of sales for about 10 years at this point. So we had spent a lot of time in a good, healthy building mode. And that was good. And I worked with a lot of great people, and that was a good thing. You know, overall, I had probably been in the sales world by that point for maybe, you know, 15, 20 years, but, you know, 10 years with this particular organization. But really what changed everything was, you've heard of venture capitalists, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. No, I know you have. We all have. What really changed was when the venture capitalist team came in, and the executive team was then charged with scaling the organization, no matter what the cost. And that's when we moved from an organization where we were leveraging technology and developing people to an organization where we were developing technology and using people. And that's a big difference. That's a big difference. And that's when I started to feel like, wow, I'm having to make decisions. I'm having to compromise in ways that I don't feel comfortable with any longer. And, you know, it took me some time to catch on, because it's a very exciting thing when venture capitalists come in and they tell you, we're going to really scale this organization and you're going to make all kinds of money and you're going to have stock options and, you know, the future's so bright we're all going to have to wear shades, right? And you get caught up in with that. And you at first are thinking, okay, I can work 7 days a week. I can work 12 hours every day. I can do this because there's a reason we're doing this, and we're all going to get rich and life's going to be good. But little did I know that in order for us, the executive management team, to all get rich, quote unquote, we were going to have to really change the way we thought about our teams. But I can literally remember the moment in time when I was told that the people who worked for me were no longer individuals, they were just numbers.
Wow.
And, yeah, and that struck this chord in my heart and in my soul, that I knew that not only was I going to have to sacrifice time away from my family, you know, friends, anything that I wanted to do, I was giving that up. I was now giving up a piece of my soul in order to move forward. That was a painful moment. That was a really painful moment.
So you find yourself at a crossroads per se, but, you know, just like anyone who has, you know, is ambitious and, you know, wants to be successful, become a victim of your own ambition.
It's so true, and that's pretty much where, you know, the name of that blog that you referred to, Frank, where we don't see our careers as they are, we see them as we are. Well, who I was at first was a well-intended person who loved developing the people around me, but slowly I could feel myself changing into this person that felt the goal was success, and what was driving me was more success, to receive more recognition and more approval, and feel like I was, you know, feeding my own beast, if you will, feeding my ego to a certain extent, that you can do this, you can reach another goal and do whatever it takes to get there. And I think at some point, even, you know, step on who you have to step on to get there. And then all of a sudden, you find yourself in this muck and you go, stop the music. Who have I stepped on and who have I become? And that's when what was this fun ride to success with these amazing goals that we were working towards, for me personally, started to feel like a prison, because I believed now that I had to be part of this, that I had committed to this, and I believed if I left, I would be sacrificing everything that I had worked for. So now, in order to achieve the goals that had been set, I was going to have to be miserable, and I was going to have to be someone that I wasn't. I was going to have to be who the corporate machine told me that I should be.
And it sounds as though that conflicted with your core values.
It conflicted with my core values, and what's so interesting is that I had started to lose touch with my core values. So what used to be something that was center and present for me at all times now kind of was this, you know, still small voice, right? This voice off in the distance, as opposed to something that was just front and center for me. And so what happened was I felt myself moving further and further away from what I believed. And the further away I got from my core values and what I believed, and the further away the organization got from developing people to the state of mind where you're using people, as that started to happen, that's when the prison door slammed shut. And I can literally remember, Frank, coming into work in the morning, because we had everyone worked in cubicles, but they were closed in cubicles, so everyone had their own small office. But literally, as I would walk down the hall, because I had about 100 people on my team, I would walk down the hall, and I couldn't shake the feeling that I was literally walking past cells, and that not only were they in prison, every day I felt like I signed myself into prison, and I didn't know how to get out. I didn't know how to stop it.
So how do you reconcile that? I mean, there's this conflict that's going on. You're one person to the world, but you're another person internally, which I'm sure it's not unfamiliar territory for anyone who may be listening to the call. So how do you reconcile that?
Right. Well, you know, what's interesting is every day I would eat my lunch alone. Every day I would get in my car, go up the hill, because we sat on the hillside, and I would sit in my car and read my Bible. And that would be the only thing that would keep me, you know, somewhat sane, but reconciling, okay, this I can literally remember, because in order to survive in this environment, I had to shut down. And in order to survive in this environment, I had to close my heart off, really. And I can remember thinking the song over and over again. Remember Simon and Garfunkel, kind of a while ago, they had a song, and the verses, the lyrics went something like, "I am a rock, I am an island. I touch no one and no one touches me." And that's, how in a very, very unhealthy way that became my mantra. Like I just had to shut everything out in order to try to survive. And it reached a point where you can imagine how unhealthy that was. But
yeah.
I could no longer go on like that. That's when I hit that crossroads and where the prison became really, you know, all that was missing was the bars, but they were there, you know. You couldn't see them, but they were there.
Mm-hmm. So talk about that defining moment, that place and time
okay.
where, you know, you finally made your mind up that it was
right.
time for change.
Right. Well, I wish I could say that I was wise enough that I made my mind up. I wish I could say that through my intellect and reasoning and my strong faith, I figured it out. It didn't happen anything like that. If God had had a 2x4, he would have used it to hit me over the head. Yeah, well, he needed to. But instead of a 2x4, I started having some bizarre dreams, which that's another conversation. We won't go there, but they were disturbing that, you know, they were telling me something's wrong in your life. But literally the day that it all changed, and it was a Sunday, I was sitting in my office because, you know, of course that's where I always was. And I was really praying and really more like begging, saying, God, I cannot do this. I don't know what to do, but I can't do this. I can't be this person anymore. I can't do this anymore. What should I do? And, you know, I think we've all felt those nudges from God. There was not, you know, there was no lightning bolt. There wasn't, you know, an audible voice that gave me a message. But I felt this urge, I felt a nudge, go to church. And so, of course, in all my wisdom, the first thing I did was to begin to argue with that voice. Because that certainly couldn't be the answer, right? And so my first response is, well, yeah, okay, fine. Yeah, I know I should go to church, but God, please tell me what to do. And, you know, I get this, go to church. And I'm like, yeah, God, I need to change my life. Going into church today is not going to help me. So, you know, again, go to church. So finally, in exasperation, I just, okay, fine. I will go to church. I know this won't do anything because, you know, I'm just, what's going to be there for me, right? This is how smart I am, okay? You might want to consider another guest next time, Craig. In the midst of the argument, I decide, okay, I'll go to church. So I pack up everything, I go to church, and now keep in mind, I really hadn't been in church in quite a while because I had better things to do, like work on my Sundays. So I go to the church that I had been to on and off, you know, over the years, and I walk in the door thinking, okay, I'm just going to be here for an hour, however long, and then I'm going to leave. As I walk in the door, they hand me the bulletin for the day or the program, and it's entitled Extreme Makeover, What to Do When Work Doesn't Work for You Anymore.
Wow.
Yeah.
Talk about a sign.
Yeah, that was my 2x4. That was my 2x4, and so I thought, this is interesting. I sit down, and as I sit down, begin to worship, listen. I mean, literally, Frank, everyone else in that church, in my world, fell away. And the preacher was speaking to me. I felt it was just this one-on-one conversation. And he was, you know, quoting and saying, you know, it was from Ecclesiastics, and now I'm going to think about, okay, so I hated life because the work that is done under the sun was grievous to me. All of it meaningless, a chasing after the wind. And that was just one of the things he said that day. And I thought, wow, this is amazing. I've been sent here. I've got this message. And just because God knew that, you know, I was the type of person that within the next 24 hours I could reason that away somehow, at the end of the service, there was actually, and I've never seen this in church prior to this nor after that, but at the end of the church service, there was a video that they played. And the video was a corporate person packing up their desk and leaving their job as everyone around them said, you're crazy, how could you leave? Which I knew if I left, that's what people would say to me. literally the guy's packing up his desk, and I'm sitting there in church watching a guy pack his desk and leave his job. And that was on in January of 2004, January 11th, actually. And I know that because I still, believe me, I still have that bulletin or that, you know, the program for the day. And
wow.
2 weeks later, I turned in my resignation.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
I
crazy
can't help
good.
But, yeah, but think that there are, you know, listeners who, you know, you're talking and sharing their life, their story, their situation. I mean, I know when I read your blog and you were telling my story, it was a story that I know isn't uncommon to most people. I mean, I think a lot of us in our society spend a lot of time working, and that so much time that we forget to live.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
We get lost
it's
in the
so
shuffle.
True. Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, I believe that on a spiritual level, that is the way that the world, the temporal world, keeps that still small voice of God quiet for us. Because if you're so busy that you're working 7 days a week, if you're so busy that you're working, you know, 70, 80 hours a week, you are so busy that you're not taking time to pay attention to the signs, nor are you able to hear those gentle promptings of the Spirit. And that's a very creative way that the world keeps us on the wrong path.
Yeah, you know, and I agree with that on some level. It still doesn't take the pain away, though. I mean, the pain is undeniable, even though, you know, we may keep running, you still feel like there's this disconnect between who you are and really where you desire to be.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. No, it absolutely does, because you're feeding a corporate machine, if you will, that has a voracious appetite that can never be satisfied. Mm-hmm. So you're on this treadmill. You're trying to feed the beast, if you will. But, you know, I think if we remove ourselves just a little bit and look at that, if we can try to be the observer of our own life, we may think in a way that we're trying to feed that beast, but that's just a distraction. I think, at least in my case, I was trying to feed the beast that's telling me who I should be as opposed to being myself. That was the huge distraction, was being something that I was not. And I thought that that's what I should do. And when you get caught up in what you should do, as opposed to who God created you to be, what you just said, Frank, that's where we get so off track. And that's why, you know, after I left, after I went back, you know, and got my degree in theology, and after I had time to process and began working as a coach, that became my life's calling, is to work with people in uncovering and discovering who they were created to be, because I realized that there was so much in my own life that covered up who I was, and the true gifts that I had been given over time had become tarnished and tossed to the back of the closet in order to, you know, be who I should be instead of who I really was.
That's a great point. So much so that, you know, I can just remember probably 6 weeks or so ago, I happened to be watching a YouTube video by a guy named Neil Gaiman. I think that's his name. And he was doing a commencement mm-hmm. address. And
uh-huh.
one of the things that stood out for me was he talked about, you know, being creative, and, you know, which led me to, you know, kind of digging a little bit deeper between being right brain dominant and left brain dominant. And
mm-hmm,
I had this revelation. The revelation was that I knew why I had been in pain for a number of years, you know, as I climbed the corporate ladder. And it was because I finally recognized that that I was creative. I was actually a right brain dominant person who was living a left brain dominant life, because when you live a left brain dominant life, you know, everything adds up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's 1 and 1 equals 2, and we know if you're being successful based on, you know, what your title mm-hmm. is and how much money you're making, as opposed to denying myself, denying who I really was, mm-hmm. because there was no way I could make sense of it in a way in which people would appreciate it, and so I just denied it.
Yeah, and I have to wonder, because I see this so many times with my clients that I work with, and in when I help them to uncover their gifts, you know, that probably didn't start for you in the corporate world. I mean, you know, if you think back, denying that right brain self, that more creative self, probably started even, you know, earlier than that.
Mm-hmm. You're absolutely correct.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say that you're correct in the sense that as I began to start digging deeper, the dots started connecting. It goes mm-hmm. back to my childhood. I mean, growing up in poverty, was horrible. But mm-hmm. as I recognized when I was 19 years old that I was the controller of my own destiny, and I began to start, you know, taking action and seeing things happen, I realized that I never had to be there if I didn't want to. And so that being in my rearview mirror kept me on the treadmill.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, you know, so many people that I speak with, there's so many good and well-intended people, and sometimes not so well-intended people that keep us from our gifts in terms of trying to develop us and trying to make us well-rounded individuals. And when you have people, you know, your teachers, and so if for your listeners who have kids, we both have kids, you know, you can see a person's gifts pretty early on in their life. I mean, if you think about it, if you just go visit a kindergarten class, you've got Susie over in the corner who's pretending to be a teacher, and she's got everybody sitting down and listening. Or you've got, you know, Patty over in another corner taking care of all the baby dolls and pretending that they're sick, and she's making them better. Or you've got Johnny who's, you know, staying after class to help the teacher get organized and put away all the papers. There's all sorts of things that we do naturally. Or you've got, you know, the little boy who's creative, the little boy who is this amazing artist. But the deal is, for whatever reason, and I love our teachers and they do an amazing job with what they have, but a lot of us are so focused on creating these well-rounded beings that we end up sending out messages that your gifts aren't quite right. You know, for instance, Johnny, put away your crayons. Stop coloring. Stop daydreaming. Stop looking out the window and come concentrate on your math. Or, you know, Susie, put that book down and go outside and play with your friends. Go make some new friends. And instead, I so wish that we spent more time developing who people really are. If Johnny is playing with the crayons, let's get him somebody to help him with art and let's make him a better artist. But instead, what we do is if Johnny is spending too much time playing with his crayons, we go out and get him a math tutor and try to make him better at math. So what Johnny gets the message right off the bat that, wow, I guess this gift of art is the wrong gift. I would be better if I had been given the gift of being good at math. I guess my gifts aren't so great. I guess I was made wrong. There's something wrong with me. And that's kind of where, that's laying the foundation right there of, you know, your gifts aren't so special. You better be who the world says you should be as opposed to who God created you to be.
Wow. I mean, that's, like you said, it's well-intentioned, but we have no idea the damage that takes place, because I believe there are tons of people who they're just at odds with themselves. I mean, they're living according to who they think they should be as opposed to who they really are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. And it you know, I've been doing this for enough years now that I see this on an ongoing basis. So it's not like, well, this is just something strange that happened in my life. And as I said, your gifts show up at a very young age. I mean, I can remember myself, one of my gifts is, one of my spiritual gifts is the gift of knowledge. Now, that doesn't mean I know more than other people. It just means I like to know a lot of stuff. Okay, that is exciting for me. And I can remember being 8, 9 years old, and now you're going to be able to figure out how old I am, because I don't know if you remember something called encyclopedias.
Of course.
As opposed to Wikipedia. But in my day and age, I can remember when we received our first set of the complete set of Collier's encyclopedias. And I sat on the floor and I took them out of their box. I dusted them off. I touched the books. I smelled the books. And when I looked at them, I was so excited, because I thought, if I read all 27 volumes, I'm going to know all there is to know. And I was thrilled. I loved those books. And that was exciting for me. Well, as you say, in the rearview mirror, in retrospect, I now know that was the earliest sign of, oh, these are my gifts. This is a gift, is this love of knowledge. Now let's work and develop it. But instead, you know, you get, oh, Susie, go outside and play with your friends. Put that book down. You know, or worse yet, you're in school and you're the little girl who loves to have the answer to every question. Well, your peers will let you know right off the bat that the gift of knowledge isn't a good gift to have, because if you have too much knowledge, you're not going to have very many friends. So at a very early age, there's the gift, but no one knew what to do with it, because nobody really thinks a lot about, oh, you've been given unique spiritual gifts, and those gifts have a purpose in this world, and you're unique, and you have a unique role. There is the mystery of the gifts. There is a whole plan that God has put together that is amazing, and if we could just put away the noise of the world for a minute and allow us to get centered within those gifts, we would know that, you know, God has created you with love, and he's infused these gifts into you, into who you truly are. And these gifts are a reflection of the Creator's love. They're a reflection of his image. And within these gifts, they hold your purpose and your mission in life. And your true calling in life is to be a reflection of your gifts, which in reality is a reflection of the Creator's love out into the world. And if you carry your gifts out into the world, what you're truly carrying out into the world is God's love. And when you do that, you are fulfilling your role in God's plan. Because if you think back to the book of Esther, there's a quote in there that I hold in my heart, and it's when they're speaking to Esther, and I'm not going to go into the whole story. You guys can look it up. It's the book of Esther, Old Testament. But there's a quote that says, who knows but that you have come to your place in this world for such a time as this. And I believe, Frank, that God is really saying that to each and every one of us, that he has sent us here. And Lord knows, you know, never has the world needed so many people to be the image, the hands and feet of love in this world. And now is all of our time.
Yeah.
Wow. I get kind of emotional about that, but I believe.
No, that, I mean, that's great. I mean, so if we think about your story, I mean, talk about the place that you get to where you finally surrender, because you know the truth is. I've always believed there are only a few reasons that people really change. I mean, the two most prevalent are, one, you experience a catastrophic event. I mean, it's really the most effective way, because it makes you look at your life. I mean, you know, you lose a loved one and all of a sudden you realize life is short, and I can't keep wasting time. I've got to change right now. I've got to do what I know I'm supposed to be doing. You know, one of the other reasons that people change is that, you know, they just wake up one day and they're simply sick and tired of being sick and tired. I mean, they get beat down and they get beat down and they keep getting up. And that's one of the things, you know, physiologically speaking, our body is just created to fight. I mean, when we get viruses, our body fights.
Right.
And so we're not programmed to give up. We just aren't. You got to kill the human body. It just doesn't die. But on some level, in order to get where you're supposed to be, you must surrender. So you surrendered.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about surrender.
Yeah, I think leaving the job was the first step, and it's a journey. I believe that surrendering is a journey. I mean, for some people do have those epiphanies, and they, you know, they have those moments in time where, you know, everything changes. And I did have that moment in time in terms of attending that church service, but then that's when I decided to change. But the process of changing, the process of surrendering took a lot longer. I mean, that was back in 2004, and I would, you know, I'd put out there that I'm still in the process of surrendering, because what I found was, you know, I got to that point and I thought, okay, God, your will. I will seek your will, and I will go forward from there. And, you know, on one hand, we want to say that when we make that decision, it's like running through a field of lilies towards your destination, and you meet it, and there's God, and there's the angels, and there's music. But for me, you know, once I made that decision, I realized that it was kind of like removing a part of my body, removing my will and surrendering to his was much more of an ongoing process than I ever thought it would be. And as a matter of fact, for me, after I left my job and I thought, okay, I'm the girl following God's will, my next stopover was in therapy as opposed to this bright future or really making it, because I really had a tough time letting go. And I kept wanting to take control again. And I kept wanting to, you know, do it myself. In my mind, I was thinking, okay, I get it, God. I was burnt out. I felt trapped. You rescued me. Now I want to be back in control and will myself into my next accomplishment. And that's how I define surrender. You know? So as you can see, you know, phase one of surrender was a pretty big power struggle for me. And then, you know, as I moved on, and as, you know, I'd like to say I grew a little bit, I realized that, you know, to fully surrender, you know, I had to realize that my future didn't have to look like my past. I kind of had this perpetual need to recreate that same accomplishment that I it was right in front of me, but I didn't realize I was trying to, you know, create the same situation all over again. And thank God, you know, God got in my way and didn't let me do that. But I had to really release my preconceived notions about who I thought I was and who the world told me that I should be. And I had to let anything go that wasn't based on, you know, divine inspired wisdom. And I really had to turn, you know, my career transition upside down by turning it right side up. And what I mean by that is, you know, most of us, in terms of walking forward and building our own careers, we very much, you know, make a decision what we're going to do next, and then we shoot a quick prayer up to God and say, God, please support me in my decision to move forward. And we think somehow that looks like God's will, right?
Yeah.
So when I say we need to turn that upside down, what I mean is, no, we need to first seek God's will and pray for that and work on that prayer life and work on becoming better listeners. And as we seek God's will, then we serve his will as opposed to asking him to serve ours. So
yeah,
that's when I started to realize that, that's when it started to change, that, oh, all along, I've been turning God into a short order cook. Like, yeah, sure, I'm following his will because I read the Bible every day, I say my prayers, and I say, Lord, your will be done, and then I go off and make my own decisions.
Yeah.
Something wrong there.
You know, and unfortunately, I mean, that's kind of the world we live in. What is celebrated is the self-made person. They're self-made. They pulled themselves up by their bootstraps, and they made all these things happen in, you know, in their career, and now people are, they're applauding their success, and they look at what they've done in order to get there. And the truth is there are a lot of people, you know, who have achieved success who are absolutely miserable. And can you imagine being in a place? I mean, you know what it feels like. I know what it feels like to feel like you've climbed a mountain and you feel lonely because you're not on the mountain you're supposed to be on.
Right.
It's not
you're on somebody else's mountain.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And so it you know, that's a difficult place to be in, because I would tell you that most people don't come down the mountain. I mean, everybody on the outside is clapping and applauding and telling you, great job, you did wonderful. You know, I know who you are, I know where you come from, and you're successful. And you're like, why do I feel horrible?
Yeah. Yeah, because you're not who you were meant to be. So, you know, but it takes, you know, peeling those onions, the layers of the onion off is not an easy thing. And like I said, you know, it takes time, and there's steps, and there's a process in terms of how to actually do that. Because, as I said, you know, surrendering is so much more than just saying the words. It's actually taking that journey and paying attention to the clues that God leaves along the way. And if you can't find a way to be silent and listen instead of, you know, making God your short order cook, you've got to take some time to study his word, and through prayer and contemplation and discernment, paying attention to working with God. And that's why, you know, you really and truly, I don't know your feelings on this, Frank, but to walk, it's not a healthy thing or an easy thing to take this type of a journey alone. That, you know, whether it is a pastor or a priest or a rabbi, you know, whomever, you know, is in your life, you need someone, or a coach, right? You need someone to take this journey with you, because so often we look in the mirror and we don't see things as they are, we see them as we are. And it gets all twisted and distorted. We need that mirror that is an objective, wise discerner to take this walk with us, to help us see the clues that we miss, to help us process and transition. Because you really can't take this journey alone. You can, but it's confusing.
It's true. And I mean, anyone who I coach, who may be listening to this, they recognize the value of that. I think we all recognize the value of that. But what we're told is that we can't share our vulnerability. We can't let people know there are chinks in our armor. We can't let people know that we're hurting by day. You know, we're struggling through what we're, you know, what's called our career in order to continue to keep moving forward and building, you know, something that isn't worth building because it's killing us at the end of the day. Yet we suffer through it on our own. And so at some point in time, Suzanne, you uncovered some secrets for yourself, you know, in order to explore and express your gifts, you know, from a career perspective. Can you share with our listeners, you know, that process for you and how they might be able to begin that for themselves?
Right. Well, okay, so first, you know, as I said, after I left the job, I did go out and seek counsel, a therapist who had a like mind and shared my values, who helped me walk through the initial part of this transition. But then and the rest of this, you know, some of it I did have to do on my own, but I've always worked with either a counselor, a coach, or a spiritual director who could help me as I went through this transition. But, you know, the first step is really making that commitment to unleash the power of God's will in this process, and the way that that is done is through that meditation, prayer, study of the Word, and really agreeing to God's presence in our life and agreeing to pay attention. And when we really agree to pay attention, He's there all the time, but He shows up. There are clues along the way that we miss when we're crazy busy. But if you take the time to get quiet and get centered, that's the first way to release the power of His will in your life. The second step is to really find out more about your own gifts and find out, you know, what your unique gifts are. And once you identify those gifts and you give them a name and be open to uncovering them and understanding them, you can then kind of work backwards and see how those gifts have been present your whole life. And that's when the clues begin to show up. Like, for instance, I was telling you about the Collier's Encyclopedia. I began to realize, oh, my gosh, this has been there all along. But it's a discernment process, and you have to study them, and you have to understand that. Once you identify that, you then need to do some searching, if you will, and consideration about what you believe about who the world says you should be versus who you really are and how you have devalued those gifts without even knowing it. And so you have to understand that and understand the roadblocks that you have put up to truly being your true self and walking through that process. And then the third step really is understanding that the dreams that you have in your heart, and I mean the ones you have in your heart, not the ones that the world tells you you should have, such as the bigger, better car, the bigger, better house, more trappings, and more material things. I'm talking about the dreams that you hold in your heart. Ever since you were a kid, I always wanted to be a whatever, fill in the blank. I always wanted to do X, Y, or Z. You know, what are those dreams? And really getting in touch with those dreams, because in all my research and all the clients that I have worked with, what I have discovered and found is that the gifts, and this is a big one, the spiritual gifts that you have been given are literally, not figuratively, literally the keys that will unlock the dreams that God has placed in your heart. God is not a cruel God. He doesn't give us our gifts and then go, oh, psych, you don't get to use them. You know, He doesn't give us our dreams and then say, oh, yeah, you're never going to have that. That is not how God's work. When you allow yourself to go through this process, this journey, and you allow yourself to get in touch with your gifts and in touch with your dreams, not the world's, your true dreams that He has placed in your heart, and your true self, and who you really are, you put together the power of God's will plus your gifts, and you're going to find yourself right in the middle of realizing your dreams.
That's huge. I mean, it's huge. I know that it's not easy. I know it requires, you know, coming to the end of yourself. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think a lot of it is about, you know, we're master manipulators, and I hate to put it that way, but it's true.
No, it's true.
We manipulate people's perception of us. We want people to view us in a certain way, and we'll do whatever we need to do in order to keep that perception intact. And mm-hmm. and it's, you know, it's going against that when you get to a place where you've gotten to the end of yourself. You have to surrender at that point, and our body, our flesh just does not want that to happen. I mean, you know, to be vulnerable, you know, to put ourselves in a place where, you know, we seem like weak, that's just not something that we appreciate. Our society doesn't clap when someone does that. They look and say, oh, my goodness, did you see what he did? Man, I don't know what in the world he's thinking, but this can't end good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had many people in my life say that. that this can't, and it, see, that's the deal, is God has this glorious, amazing future for each and every one of us, but, you know, we're just trapped and distracted by illusion, and we're trapped and distracted by the illusion of what makes us happy, joyful, and successful, and it's just not true.
Yeah.
What is really what is true is God's reality. And you know what? Sometimes, yeah, I don't want to mislead. This journey is not easy because we are so darn stubborn and stiff-necked that the only way God can reach us is sometimes through our pain and our suffering. So he interjects that into this journey to find it, our gifted self. He allows pain and suffering to come in because that is where he can teach us our greatest lessons. So you learn on this journey that some of the clues that you get, you know, the breadcrumb trail he leaves for us, some of them are in the form of the pain and suffering that occurs along the way. And whereas the world is pointing to us and saying, ha ha, yeah, I knew that would happen. I knew once she gave up that job and gave up all that money, yeah, there she is. She's having financial problems. Yeah, well, we knew that would happen. And when you've made it to the other side, you say, thank you, God, for these challenges you have brought me, because that is where the greatest lessons lie.
Yes.
Thank you for taking away everything except the core of who I am, because it is at the core of who I am that I meet you, God.
Yeah. We've got about 10 minutes. I want to give the listeners an opportunity to call in and ask questions. I want to give the number. If you have a question or a comment for Suzanne or myself, you can dial 619-393-2918. Again, that's 619-393-2918. You know, Suzanne, it reminds me, I mean, about one of the things that I do with my clients. The first thing I do with my clients, I make them complete a discovering your core values exercise. Because you have to know who you are at all points in time. You have to hold those things near and dear, because absent clear values, you have no ability to differentiate between opportunities and distractions. And you'll find yourself going down roads that are the nice, shiny, you know, glimmering, you know, things that say, hey, me, come get me, I'm worth it. And you go down roads you were never meant to go down. And then you find yourself at a dead end and hurting and in pain, and you're like, how did I get here? It's because you compromised yourself. And whatever you compromise to gain, you'll ultimately lose. A house that's divided against itself can't stand.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Yeah. I hear you. And so many of us have lost touch with who we are. I mean, at one point maybe we knew, you know, but it's been years since we've been in touch with those core values. And over those years, for some of us, you know, it's like, well, yes, of course, that spiritual God thing is good to have. Yeah, that's good that you go to church on Sunday. Very good. But Monday through Friday, you've got to go out and be somebody different. And that just doesn't work after a while.
Wow.
Yeah. So really, really wise of you to have the people that you work with get in touch with those values first. Because if you don't know that, you're right. You're distracted by every bright, shiny object that comes along the way. And that's never a good thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Do you have, you know, as we wait to see if anyone has a question or anything, do you have any advice that you would give to someone who finds themselves, you know, in that place where they recognize that they're not where they're supposed to be, and they've accepted it, they allowed it, they're enduring? And I've always said that a lot of times our ability to endure is really based on you know, our threshold, the threshold that we have for pain. Some people can take pain like nobody's business, and, you know, they'll end up dying and never correcting or never course correcting and making a change. Some people say that hurts, and I don't want to be here anymore, and I got to find where I'm supposed to be. So do you have any advice for someone who may find themselves in a place that you were in, and you know, what would be their first step?
Right. Well, I think you've said something very wise, Frank, and what you've said in essence is the ability to tolerate a high level of pain, even though society may say that's a good thing, it is not such a good thing. If you are in pain, pay attention to that. I mean, just as if you had a broken arm, you know, who would go around applauding you for walking around with a broken arm and still getting your job done? That doesn't make sense. We are all mind, body, and spirit. And if your physical body is broken, you're going to fix it. If you are experiencing pain and you're just enduring, truly, I mean, you may be having physical signs. You may have high blood pressure. There could be all sorts of problems that go along with that. But if you are in a state of pain and you are finding yourself, instead of, you know, you're in survival mode and you're just enduring, listen to that pain is the first step. And why are you in pain? Something is wrong with your circumstance. What is wrong with your circumstance? And if you can't figure that out for yourself, if it's not making sense for you, work with someone to help you better understand that. But there is a lesson in the pain. Pain is a good thing. Pain is a message, is a message carrier, and it's carrying a message. Pay attention to that, because something is out of alignment with your body, mind, and or spirit if you're in pain. So listen to it. Discern what that pain is. Kind of going back to my situation, you know, I was finding out, and really more in retrospect, it's hard when you're in the moment or you're in that whirlpool and you're spinning. It's sometimes hard for that discernment. So get help. You know, that's one thing for sure. But the pain is typically being caused by what Frank said earlier, not being true to who you really are, not being true to your values. And when you figure out that that's what's going on, then it's time to look at next step. What needs to happen next? What steps can I take to move forward? And the steps to move forward are to acknowledge that pain and to get back in touch with your faith. Because if you're enduring and you're in pain, you're not really connected to the source. You're not connected to God as your source. There's a disconnect there, and that's part of the pain that you feel. It doesn't mean you're a bad person. It doesn't mean that you don't pray on some level, but if there's pain in your life, it's because you're not truly connected to your God. And He wants to be that conduit. He wants to be feeding you and sustaining you, and He doesn't want you to be in pain, but sometimes that's the only way He can get your attention. So there's something to be paid attention to, and sometimes you can figure it out on your own, as I said, but, you know, get someone to help you through that discernment process, so then you can move forward and you can start getting to the core of this, understanding the source of your pain, why this lesson is in your life, and then begin to put the pieces together of, wait a minute, who am I really, as opposed to the life that I'm living, and starting to put the pieces of the puzzle together.
That's great. That in and of itself is worth the price of admission. Before we end the show, Suzanne, you know, been so gracious. You have a special offer for all of our listeners today, and I'd like to be able to give that to them. So would you mind doing such?
Oh, no problem at all. I would really like to do that. And I really want to say thank you to Frank. Frank, I have the utmost respect for you and your listeners. I feel so blessed with our friendship, and I know we'll be doing many things together, so this is great. Any way that I can be of service to you or your listeners, that's what I'm here for. And as a thank you to Frank for letting me be part of the show, that was very generous of you, and for allowing me to share my message with your listeners. Just for Coach Frank's listeners and nobody else, but just for the special listeners, I do have a special offer. I have my program called The Gifted Vocation, where I do take people through a discernment process of assessing their understanding, assessing their gifts, finding out what they are first, and then uncovering those gifts and understanding how they can go about expressing those gifts and marketing themselves in the job world, how they can bring that into the world to find a career that has meaning for them and purpose. So typically that program runs about $299 for a six-week program. But for Coach Frank's listeners today, I'd be more than happy. It's a privilege for me to offer that for, instead of $299, $159 for each and every one of Coach Frank's listeners. So if you would like to take advantage of that offer, you can email me at info@thegiftedvocation.com and simply type in Hour of Truth in the subject line, and I will have my team respond to you and send out to you instructions on how to register for that program. Because, you know, if you're ready to create a meaningful career, I'd love to guide you through your journey. You know, don't waste another minute going down the path that I went down. If there's alarms going off, if you're frustrated, if you're in pain, as we just said, there's a reason. Figure out what that reason is and figure out how to turn what has turned wrong in your life into something with more meaning, something that reflects you, because I am so blessed. I am able to work in my passion. I'm able to do what I love, which is work with people and help them to uncover their gifts and create more meaningful careers. And that never would have happened if, you know, God had not hit me over the head with a 2x4 and said, "You're in pain. I'm trying to send you a message." And so I'd be more than happy, and I'd love to work with any of your listeners out there. So please, if you'd like to take advantage of that offer, just email me at info@thegiftedvocation.com.
Wonderful, wonderful. You know, to all the listeners, Suzanne is a phenomenal, phenomenal person and professional. I mean, if she spoke to your heart, I mean, what are you waiting for? I wouldn't waste another, you know, day suffering through something that you have had the ability to change all along. You know, so I'd like to thank our guest and my friend, Suzanne Freiberg, for joining me. Suzanne, great to have you on. All the best to you. Thank you so much.
Thank
I
you,
am
Frank.
Coach Frank.
Blessings
no,
to you.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you so much. I'm Coach Frank Thomas on the new Hour of Truth with Coach FT on the Creating Calm Network on Blog Talk Radio. Join me next Sunday at 3 p.m. as I bring new stories, new hope, new truth. You've been listening to the Hour of Truth with Coach FT. Until next week, God bless you. Thanks for listening.